does have it all. All of our pre-owned vehicles are Hubler Q certified, which include a 128-point vehicle inspection, a free Carfax vehicle history report, and two warranties. A two-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty, and a 30-day, 1,000-mile comprehensive warranty. Visit any of our 13 locations today, or click drivehubler.com. Hubler has it all.
This is Trackside with Kirk Cavan and Kevin Lee.
You can see Albuquerque flashing the lights.
Watch
on
this. Albuquerque's going to get around Jaminet. It's stalled. Albuquerque to the outside for the lead.
Oh, but Albuquerque's so wide, almost off the track. He goes to the inside.
Oh,
gets hit. They hit. He's off the road.
Off goes the 10. Oh, and it's a arms wide.
And he hits the 6.
Oh,
the 7's involved.
Oh,
where
my goodness.
Aiken? Aiken could be in the lead of this race.
All three leaders are out. Did Aiken make it through?
Believe what you eat just seen.
And there should
chaos.
Be a penalty on Jaminet, but it will not matter as the cars are destroyed and caution is out.
Final run down the Almond Straight. And what a day it is going to be for Cadillac Racing, for Action Express, Wheel and Engineering. Jack Aitken's going to steer it home. And Pippo Durrani will win for the fourth time overall. Cadillac Racing continues its domination at Sebring. Sims, Jack Aitken, and the Dynamo, Pippo Durrani. How about this? Scotty Mack, Scott McLaughlin, and LMP2 for Tower Motorsports. Josh Ferrato and Kiffin Simpson, they're victorious in the second prototype class.
Hello, welcome. It's Trackside, 93.5, 107.5, The Fan in Indianapolis. Kevin Lee, Kirk Cavan, Eddie Garrison. In our studios on Monument Circle in downtown Indianapolis, we start with some of the highlights of the Mobile One 12 Hours of Sebring, courtesy of NBC Sports, with a lot of familiar IndyCar names, plenty to get to in the IndyCar world coming up tonight, including a couple of drivers who have factored into sports car racing in the past, one who won this past weekend, and one who we are going to see back in a car very, very soon. Ryan Hunter-Reay will join us, recently named to a Dreyer and Reinbold Indy 500 entry, and Kiffin Simpson will be on the show. He was a part of the winning team. Scott McLaughlin brought overall. They finished on the podium overall because they done all gone crashing. It looked like Talladega or Daytona in a cup race at the end of a sports car race. 20 minutes to go, the top three crashed out. The car in fourth. Matriculated to the front of the field, the Wheel and Engineering Cadillac, which includes Pippo Durrani, winning for the fourth time. They won, and a lot of storylines to get to that we'll talk about as we go through the evening tonight. Kurt, how are you? Welcome.
Well, it's good to have an IndyCar conversation that is going to include a race here in the next, 10, 12 days. So we'll be back at Texas pretty soon for the second race of the season. And it's good to know that Ryan Hunter-Reay is going to be back in the Indianapolis 500. I didn't see as much of the Sebring race as you did. We had some family matters to get to over the weekend. So I'm a little bit, other than seeing highlights and reading about the event, didn't get a chance to really absorb it. It's still on my DVR, but I know you have a lot of good notes from that, and you will get into that. But this is an IndyCar show, so whatever we can do to talk about Scott McLaughlin and Ryan Hunter-Reay and Jack Harvey being cleared, we got a lot to get to still tonight.
And by the way, there still is some racing coming up this weekend in what was formerly known as the Road to Indy, because you can never get enough trips to Sebring. I'm headed back there on Thursday for the USF Pro Championship. So USF Pro 2000, USF 2000, and USF Juniors will make their season debut running from Thursday through Sunday. Jackson will be racing on Friday and Saturday. It's the third straight weekend of an event there. So if you're in the area, come by. It's not a free event. There are tickets because, you got to pay the bills. There's also historic sports cars this weekend and some different classes. So it is a full weekend at Sebring, and maybe we'll see you there. So we'll get into that schedule at the end of the program tonight. But let's talk about what's happening in IndyCar. And we'll start first with the Indianapolis 500. We are a month away from testing in April for the 500. And we now have a field of 33 cars entered.
Well, we do. Dreyer Riebold has added the second car that we've all been anticipating for some time. We just weren't sure which direction that would go with the driver. They've gone pretty strong with a guy who could be a two- or three-time winner at this point in his career. Does have the 2014 win under his belt. So the BorgWarner Trophy has Ryan Hutter-Reay's likeness on it. So good for him. Good for us that we're going to get to watch him race again. And he will be teaming. He'll be in the number 23 Chevrolet alongside Stefan Wilson, who was named earlier to the program. So it's good. It's been what Ryan wasn't in last year's Indy 500, but he was in the year before, ending a really long association with Andretti Autosport. You weren't really sure where it was going to end up for Ryan. Could he end up with Ganassi? We talked about Ray Hall at one point. You know, was there an opportunity at all? So for him to get back in the seat with a team that obviously has shown well for a one-off, you know, they had two cars in the top 10, what, last year, the year before. So they've had cars compete, you know, and challenge for the race win. That's what Ryan Hutter-Reay wants to do at this point in his career. You know, obviously a great representative for BorgWarner and for the Indy 500 and the Speedway as a whole. So good to have Ryan Hutter-Reay back.
Yeah, I wasn't certain if that was going to come to fruition or not, but started feeling better about it in the last week or so. You know, I think I've even said on the show, my assumption for a little while has been that J.R. Hildebrand was going to end up in that seat. J.R. normally has some commercial partners that help support, and I have not spoken to Dennis Reinbold, so I don't know what the requirements were going to be. Was it going to be a situation where someone needed to bring a partner and help out with the budget a little bit? So that was kind of one of my thoughts. And plus, by the way, J.R. Hildebrand's really good, really competent. He's had relationships there in the past, but then started hearing, no, that may not be the case. And that's when Ryan gets back in play. Thought he might end up at Ganassi. I think it had a decent chance of happening, but I still don't know if that was ever going to happen because it's become clear that that seat requires budget. From the news that we've learned recently that Takuma Sato, a two-time Indianapolis 500 winner, is only guaranteed to do Texas and Indy because there's not enough budget from his side of things to do the rest of the oval races. So if Takuma doesn't have enough to do multiple races, then now maybe the 500 is different. Maybe they were in a position where they could put partners together. And if Takuma wasn't there, then Ryan might have been offered that chance. Then the Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan, when that fourth car was out there, I thought that might happen. But I get the impression that Honda wanted to do something a little bit different as well and be more unique. And while a former Indy 500 winner is unique, having the chance to have a talented, quality female driver with an associate determining factor in that situation. So then it's what is out there. And if you're Ryan, and we'll talk with him about this in an hour, do you feel like this situation is good enough? And it's not my call to make. But my opinion would be yes. I think you can run up front. I think in circumstances, Ryan Hutter-Reay could win the race in this car.
I agree. He's certainly very talented, and it goes on multiple years and multiple generations of the car. It's not like, you know, sometimes we've seen in Indy 500 history, a driver with the right team at the right engine, the right tire at the right moment can win the Indy 500. But in his case, you know, you not only is the 2014 Indy win significant, he was leading on the last restart in 2013. He probably had the best car in 2016. He was really, really good in 2021. So he has had multiple times, multiple situations, although all with the same team. But, you know, it wasn't dominant, let's say, like maybe one manufacturer was hooked up that particular year. He's done it multiple ways. And so I think that's why you really respect his talent at Indianapolis. Something you said, though, about Takuma Sato was interesting. I'm surprised that I'm surprised they only have the budget for two races. I mean, I know Indy's a bigger budget in the pie, but you know, that both of those entries are going to be really interesting to watch. And, you know, if I'm Takuma, these are the two I'd want to do that. Although he's been pretty good at Gateway as well. You know, there's both these programs are going to be really interesting. And I hope, you know, for both of their sakes, they got a chance when the last restart comes.
So that information, so I'll kind of jump forward and we'll circle back to Ryan Hunter Ray. That information came, I think, at St. Petersburg when Chip Ganassi sat down with a few different reporters. I think Nate Ryan from NBCSports.com, probably Nathan Brown from the Indianapolis Star. I think Jenna Fryer from the Associated Press was there. That's where I've seen most of it coming out. And in that, Chip confirmed that, you know, one, in talking about Marcus Armstrong, I think that might be how it started, that we're really impressed with Marcus Armstrong. He's only doing road and street courses. And hey, we're not confirmed in that car for the other ovals beyond the first two. So we might consider putting him in that car at some point. I don't know if that would be, we'll put you in that car if another check comes around or not. And then what also he clarified is, you know, it's not as if there is huge incentive to just keep the car on the track for leader circle purposes. For those that aren't paying closely attention, that's sort of the revenue sharing are given a certain amount of money throughout the year in lieu of significant purse. But there, and it's a contract between the teams and the series, so none of this is really public. But one of the things that I've heard over the years is that three entries per team are the max allowed unless you were grandfathered in. So unless at one point they allowed more than that. So, for example, Andretti still has four leader circle programs. But the fourth Ganassi car, even if they finish 1, 2, 3, 4 in the championship, is not eligible for the leader circle. So that money is not there. Now, there's still some prize money that's allotted to that entry, but it's in a different format. There's budget to run these cars, and if the budget's not there, Chip's a smart businessman. It's not coming out of his pocket, generally speaking. Now, as I say that, I'm going to guess he's helped fund some cars before.
Yeah, I think that's true. He wouldn't run that extra car just for the good sake of running that car. It doesn't add extra to the program to run at Iowa, to run at Gateway.
Some other really interesting nuggets out of the Chip Ganassi gathering with journalists a couple of weeks ago in St. Petersburg from Nate Ryan on NBC Sports. On the future of his IndyCar driver lineup, we never look forward and plan. We just throw darts. He was having a good time with people on the day. And after being pressed about Scott Dixon's future, oh, I'm not going to have him forever, okay? We're signing Dixon to an 11-year deal, which is correct. I guess that's not forever. On being interviewed for the new 100 Days to Indy docuseries, he said, that's why I got in the sport, to be on TV. Oh, I hope he agrees to be interviewed for this, and I hope Zach Brown agrees to be interviewed for this. If the drivers are going to need to play along, I think the owners are going to need to play along as well. The journalists that are being asked to participate, too. So I hope so, and I hope he's blunt and honest on that. Some other blunt and honest comments on the rebranding of Indy Next. He said, yeah, that was the problem with that series. It was the name. God, why didn't we think of that? All caps. On the U.S. judicial system, this must have come up when they were talking about Alex Palou. And he's been adamant that he didn't sue Alex Palou, that, you know, matter of semantics. And he said there was never a lawsuit filed. I don't know what you guys keep saying a lawsuit was filed. There was never any lawsuit filed. There were certainly lawsuits written, but I never sued him. There was never a lawsuit filed. We went to arbitration, which is in the contract. You don't sue somebody to go to arbitration. That was spelled out in the contract. Okay. But on the U.S. judicial system, Chip said, that's why you never want to go to a jury trial. You're putting your life in the hands of 12 people that can't get out of jury duty. Also, back to the Palou thing, he said to Nate Ryan and others, Nate wrote, despite their contentious squabbling last year, Ganassi said things are good now with Alex Palou. I believe that. And that the 2021 champion is welcome to stay at Ganassi beyond 2023. I believe that too. I also don't believe he's going to be staying at Ganassi beyond 2023. But Ganassi said he knows that when asked if Pelot could return. Maybe he already has a deal, Chip said. I don't know. Hey, I never flinched 1 minute on Friday, Saturday, Sunday last year about his car, and I think that showed. I've got to hand it to him for all he put himself through to do that. That's no small feat. It'd take a lot, I would think. One, probably no other opportunity, but I think that ship has sailed. I know contractually he's not allowed to sign with anyone. Can he agree with someone? How does that work if he already agreed to terms last year before this new provision was written in there? But he likes the idea of testing a Formula One car and maybe that being an option for a path. Whether he was sued or not, it got dark for a little while there. So I don't, can you never say never? You know, I would say you could never say never, but I suspect he already has an agreement and that's not going to change. If somehow he does not, then I would give it a glimmer of hope if the season goes fantastic and Chip Ganassi Racing decides we got to keep this guy. He's the future, our eventual number one driver. And then you're willing to really open up the bank for him. But highly, highly doubt that. But I think Chip answered that the correct way because, hey, it's he's good. And they've already gotten past the hard point. So I believe they could continue to mend fences and go beyond that. But again, that would be if there was no other option available that was satisfactory to Alex Pelot, and I don't think that's the case. We should get back to the Indy 500 situation. So we're at 33 now. You know, my first thought has been that's probably going to be it because I didn't see, as I looked through the existing teams, anyone being willing to do an extra entry. There's been, you know, I wouldn't even say a report or anything to it, but as I kept hearing, there could be a 34th and maybe a 35th. I started to wonder, well, would Dreyer and Reinbold do a third car? I wouldn't think so, but I think they're maybe more equipped to do it than some of the other teams. And some teams have already said unequivocally no. But I hear that's not going to be the case. So then where is it going to be? Racer.com wrote last week, essentially, and I'm paraphrasing, that Foyt would be open to that in the right circumstances, and that this would make sense to me if they found full sponsorship. And then they would need somewhere to put ABC Supply, which they've already agreed to. So if they found sponsors, they would then be in a position, if they had three primary sponsors, then they would be in position. Maybe it's only one more, because I would think Sexton Properties is going to be on one of their cars. They've been huge in helping them, especially after the Rocket money never showed up last year. So that's the scenario. Is that real likely to happen? I hope it happens for them, but I don't know that's super likely. And then you get into, all right, if you've got budget, where do you want to take that if there's no guarantee of making the race? The last time there was bumping, the extra Foyt car didn't get in. The first two Foyt cars, you know, with experienced drivers, I wouldn't have a whole lot of concern for that. They put together good Indy 500 cars. Gets a little tougher when you start doing things on short notice and that isn't planned way in advance. So that's why I was starting to wonder, you know what, if it happens, is there something we don't know about? Because Jay Fry has mentioned, Mark Miles have mentioned, there is a possibility of a 34th or 35th. So I started thinking it's got to be somebody that's bringing a new entry. And Marshall wrote about Able Motorsports. And at Sebring, I heard a couple of other things. And I think there is at least some traction to that. Now, I have not talked to Bill Able about this recently or even last year. But it would make some sense to me. So his son, Jacob, is pretty talented and had a really good weekend at St. Pete. He's generally not had teammates in the past. It's been a family-run team. And I think, you know, am I going to say he's Linus Lundqvist or Kyle Kirkwood? Not necessarily. But there have been, I feel this, there have been drivers make it to IndyCar that won't have the seasoning or the accomplishments that Jacob Able does. I think he's beyond competent, and he might even be good. I'm just not qualified to say whether he's really good or not, but I think there is a chance that he might be really good. And remember, they're doing it. They have a good budget, but until St. Pete generally speaks. So there could be a scenario where they're thinking, all right, let's go ahead and get an Indy 500 program going now. That'll help Jacob when he's ready to do it. We'll have the infrastructure. And if it commercially makes sense, maybe we can go ahead and do it in 2023. You only need to beat one other car. And then you start thinking, where could it come? Maybe it's from some of these other commercial programs that have tried to do something, but that don't have a car. And I don't know whether Able Motorsports has a car or not, but I believe there are cars out there that can be had, and it might make sense for him. Go ahead and get a car now. We'll keep it, and it will become Jacob's car, maybe even to start testing in later in the year, and he runs it either in IndyCar next year or the year after. They've been patient with him. So could that be where a Peretta combines with and brings Simona DiSilvestro? Maybe. Maybe that's an opportunity. One of the others could, I don't think Vassar Sullivan is looking at the Indy 500 this year, but that would be the type of situation that you're looking at as well. Maybe the Spirit of Speedway operation with Will Marotti has some budget that they could bring to a program and help, you know, and you could piece it all together. We've seen extra entries that had essentially four different entities involved in it. So am I telling you that's going to happen? No, I don't know that it's going to happen, but that would, I think, be the path there. A couple of weeks ago, I would have said we are done at 33 and there's really no chance, you know, and then it becomes, all right, if it's a 34, are we bumping one of our own? So Chevy might take that into consideration. That's why it makes sense for a different team. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me for Foyt to bring in a third car. Foyt might bump their second car if they're in that situation. Is the fourth Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan operation, would that be one of those that be in peril a little bit and maybe incentivize Chevy to, hey, we're not necessarily bumping another Chevy. Ray Hall Letterman wasn't super fast last year in the 500, and their driver hasn't done it for a while. So that could be some thinking. Now, all that said, my guess is Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan has it together this year. And with a proper test program, I think Catherine will be fine. But if there's 34, you know, we're going to talk about some that are going to be in peril. And there are surprises. Will Power was on the last row when they had bumping, whenever that was, 2, 3, 4 years ago, the year that Fernando Alonso got bumped from the race. So that's what's out there. There's still plenty of other drivers in the mix, or at least that could potentially be in the mix, but that's probably where things stand at this point. All right, we've got some other things. Do we want to get into another driver? You know, maybe we should mention a Linus Lundqvist. It sounds like he is going to be in a car very, very soon. We had testing at Texas. There is racing coming up soon at Texas, and plenty more on the way, including Ryan Hunter-Reay and LMP2 class winner at Sebring, Kiffin Simpson, and Indy Next driver all coming up. Trackside, 93.5, 107.5 The Fan.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Hi, this is Alexander Rossi, and you're listening to Trackside.
All right, we continue the conversation, and we have Kurt back with us, even though I have a telecommunications degree. Generally, that consisted of go sit behind the desk and talk rather than hook things up. So sometimes my microphone or others' microphones work. Sometimes they do not. We think everything is in full operating procedure now, and we continue to pick up where we left off. First, before we get back to some other things like IndyCar in Argentina and testing at Texas. Last weekend was one of those weekends where I kind of wish, I don't ever wish I was on the couch because my couch does not pay well, but I wish I could have consumed more of what's going on. And I have made it a point. I watched the Xfinity race. I'm going to say yesterday morning, I watched the F1 race at the airport on Sunday. By the way, how would you feel about your championship? Luckily, they do have two cars on the same team fighting for the championship, but even before the season began, we knew the championship was over. As people like to say, it's about everything other than the race, and things are still going great for Formula One, so God bless them.
Yeah, how about was it Hamilton that said he's never seen a faster race car than the Red Bulls were on this occasion? By the way,
that's because he was in his car, others have said. So he didn't see his car back in the day.
Yeah, that's true. And Shumi would have been kind of the same thing. I will say this. I think the visual of that race with the lights along the Red Sea, really cool visual.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, I think that's as cool of a night shot as you could ask for. I don't know what they use that property for the rest of the year, but it looks spectacular. And by the way, I was trying to imagine walking from one end to the other, as you know, as we often will have to do if we're in a hotel that's not in the location where the paddock is. And I lost track of the blocks that you would have to walk. I mean, it looked like we'd go about an inch on the racetrack, and it was probably 8 to 10 blocks. So it's going to be a long walk from that north end to the south end of that racetrack in Saudi Arabia.
Well, they have been fortunate that they've got Fernando Alonso back and competitive, because in race number one, he was the only thing interesting about that. Race number two would help that Verstappen went, not kablamo, but had the mechanical in qualifying. And at first I said he'll still win. And then I thought, you know what? No, he's probably too far back to beat the other Red Bull. So I accurately, in my mind, not that anybody cares, predicted the 1-2-3, was less confident about Alonso. And even that's gone back and forth. You know, we talk about different sanctioning bodies not being able to get their act together. This is the most well-funded, deepest, resourced organization you can have, and they can't figure out whether a penalty is a penalty or not. And as we speak, Alonso finished third, but that might still be subject to change. Then you got NASCAR, where my buddy Parker Kligerman almost won, might have had the best car at Atlanta on Saturday, finishes fourth backwards. He got crashed at the end of the race. Atlanta is now another plate track. That's what that's been changed to. It's not a plate, but it races just like a plate track. And that was interesting. The Cup race, the jokes were, what's going to last longer, the Atlanta Xfinity race or the 12 hours of Sebring? And it was close. The Cup race, I think, went the last 40, 45 laps or so in green flag conditions. And yeah, Joey Logano is really, really good. I thought Keselowski was finally going to win one. So that was a little bit of what we saw over the weekend. And oh, yes, there was some basketball. I saw the Purdue game, and I apologize, Purdue fans, that that's the only game I saw over the weekend. I didn't even fill out a bracket because I knew I would have no time to participate in that. So now we can move on and focus more on racing. And including in recent days, there was some testing. What, it took a couple of days to get the rookie test done at Texas because of some bad weather. Tell me what you know about the rookies who tested last week in Texas.
Well, I've had a chance to talk to a couple of them, and we had three rookies in the test day. The first day, they were trying to schedule and run. There were some tornadoes in the area, some inclement weather and wind, and they just couldn't finish. Our friend of the show, Augustin Canapino, was really appreciative of having that overnight. He said, you know, look, I didn't get off to a very good start. I didn't have much confidence in myself and the aerodynamics and the car itself and the banking and X, Y, and Z that goes with racing at Texas. And he said, having the overnight really allowed me to gather my thoughts, think about what I had learned, think about what, you know, others had told me. Callum Ilott was there on his radio. He had a pretty lengthy discussion with Alex Palou before he went down there. So he said just having that reset overnight was really helpful to him. Stingray Robb talked about how, you know, it was one of the first times that a race car has really taken his breath away. It was a very productive test for those two, plus Benjamin Peterson. They got to run together some. There's some video on Canapino's social media accounts that have he and Stingray Robb running together. So, you know, look, you don't figure out Texas in one test, whether it's over one day or 2 days. They're going to have to run in a big field come next weekend. And, you know, I expect both of them to be, and all three of them to really take a conservative approach. Canepino was saying, look, the whole season's going to be like that for me, but this one in particular will be like that. I need to learn every lap and just, you know, really take it as they come. I will say from the Dale Coyne perspective, which is where Stingray Rob is, keep in mind that they've done really well with some rookie drivers at Texas. They've done a nice job of kind of doing it slow, but bring them up to speed. Malukas ran in the top 10 last year, as an example. He'll be there for Stingray next week to kind of counsel and you know, offer feedback to what Stingray's feeling and experiencing. But the 28 cars next week, because Ed Carpenter will join the 27 car field. Sato will be in place of Marcus Armstrong, but a 28 car field is a lot. You know, we've seen the racing kind of spread out. In fact, you mentioned restrictor plate racing in NASCAR at Atlanta. That's how Atlanta was for the IndyCar guys, but we've not seen that in recent years at Texas. So I expect it'll kind of string out a little bit, which will be helpful for those three rookies. Yeah, like you mentioned, no incidents, you know, but the real deal comes next week when you actually have to race and we'll see how that goes. You know, it was the most exciting race. I mean, aside from the Indy 500 last year on the schedule with Newgarden passing Scott McLaughlin on the last lap. McLaughlin ran very well. He's the story of the week, really, after his 12 hours of Sebring drive that we saw over the weekend. So, you know, he's going to be tough. The Penske's will be tough, and the rookies will, you know, try to figure it out, and they'll have to do so on the fly.
Yeah, the race last year was pretty good, and I know they're doing more of the extra groove practice. I forget the numbers that did it last year, but there are going to be more tires available and more drivers invited to participate in that extra high line session. So it seemed to help last year. And beyond that, it probably just added a little bit of confidence for some people being able to tiptoe up in that area. You know, when you talk about these young drivers and having others there to help them, like a Callum Mylott, and at first thought you might say, well, it'd be better to have Ryan Hunter-Reay, who helped Callum Mylott last year, but maybe not. You'd never turn down having Ryan Hunter-Reay, but I think having a David Malukas to help Stingray Rob and a Callum Mylott to help Augustine Canepino might be more relevant to a young driver because they remember it from last year. It's been a while since a veteran has dealt with it, and the first time they got in an Indy car at a place like Texas. Well, one, it may have raced totally different back in the day. The car was different. So these drivers experienced just last year exactly where the track is the same. Because remember, the track is not at all what it was 5 years ago with the, not rosin, but the stuff. The stuff they put down there a few years ago that some people would say ruined the track, it's made it very different, especially in the second line. So I feel good about that. I feel good about Canepino and Stingray Rob being able to learn from their young veteran teammates in that circumstance. And then we'll see another young driver. This is quite unique, and this is news that came out, was it yesterday? Was it this morning? I saw it first from Feeder Series Americas, which is a Twitter handle I follow that covers people like my son, Jackson, and that level of racing, that last year's Indy Lights champion, now Indy Next, Linus Lundqvist, is going to get that IndyCar test. We've heard rumors about that with Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan at Texas the day after the IndyCar race on April 3rd. And they had a quote from Bobby Rahal telling Swedish TV that RLL will, quote, we'll see what we can do to run in a couple of races this year.
I think that's terrific. And obviously, we're all pulling for Linus to have his first chance in an IndyCar, you know, from a racing standpoint. You know, that obviously the four-car operation is going to be in play at Ray Hall at Indy. So they'll kind of be built up for it to do that if need be. You know, you wish you could get more races, but at this point, I think Linus would just say, just give me any. And And I go back to Canapino for a second. Did I call him Augustine? I'm just going to call him Hugo. We had a conversation when he went into the Starbucks. They can't pronounce Augustine or Augustine the way he says it. So he'll take his middle name. I'm going to go with Hugo.
Townsend asked him in our production meeting at Thermal, can we call you Gus? And it was a terse no. So he does not prefer Gus. So maybe Hugo is acceptable.
Hugo is his middle name. So I can get Canapino. So if I'm going to call him Canapino with some regularity, that's why. Because it's like I have a brain stoppage of which way we're going to say his first name. It's probably like Simon or Simone. We won't really. He'll take both. And we'll go from there.
Okay. Oh, we should also mention good news that Jack Harvey was cleared late last week. I'm going to say Thursday or Friday. That I know it came through. Well, maybe it was over the weekend, but it wasn't today and it wasn't yesterday. So he'll be able to drive at Texas. We still don't know what it was. I know he mentioned that his wrists were sore after the race. So that's good that Jack is cleared. Makes me wonder, no offense to Yuri Vips, who got the chance to drive the car in the test at Barber a week or two ago. I wish, and I say I wish because I don't know Yuri Vips. So no offense to him, but I know Linus Lundqvist and I like him. And I'd like to see those that come up through the American ladder system get the opportunity. I wish he would have gotten that chance.
Well, it may have been a case of they were already down the road with Yuri to be in that test and, you know, who knows?
Yeah, but he was replacing. But yeah, I know what you're saying. And it may have been, hey, we thought he did pretty well the last time around. And, you know, when that comes up, by the way, it's also possible that maybe Linus wasn't available.
Yeah.
That particular day and had something already scheduled, or maybe it happened on such short notice. Did he have his medical done in time? They can usually get that stuff done pretty quickly. But since Vips had already been in an IndyCar, maybe that was the part of it there that played into it. But that was just a thought. I would love to see him get that opportunity there, but I'm glad he's still getting one at this point. And you're right. There is the possibility that they are more equipped to run a fourth car at some point later down the road. The reality is, hey, nothing is guaranteed, and smart teams are planning a couple of steps down the road. Jack Harvey, I would imagine his contract is up at the end of this year, and no one has ever guaranteed anything. I think Christian Lundgaard is on a multi-year contract, but I don't know that. And if he wins three races this year, who knows what offers come his way. So there's no 100% guarantee. Is it 99% that he's back next year? I would think so. I know they really like him, and I would imagine they have him secured. And I don't think Graham Rahal is retiring after this year, but you never know. You don't know with 100% certainty, so it's good to just have some options that you can do, whether you're a three-car team or a four-car team. Let's go back to Juncos Hollinger Racing because they're associated with the next story. Saw on social media yesterday, who found it first? Our man Matt Archuleta, Indy 44, found the Argentinian reports that I couldn't translate, but there were pictures. And in the pictures, I recognized Mark Miles. I recognized Tony Kottmann, who approves and helps design racetracks. And I also recognize some other IndyCar dignitaries as well that would be in that situation if you were considering another track. So apparently they were in Argentina yesterday, today, something like that, exploring the possibility that we've heard about of maybe racing in Argentina.
Well, that's the track where Canapino ran, and they did a ceremonial kind of lapse, if you will, with Canapino and the Juncos team, probably about 6 weeks ago. And so may have been a little bit more than that. I can't remember exactly the timeline on that.
In the fall. Yeah. October, November.
I think Michael Montri was down there. He basically runs the Detroit Grand Prix
Promoters. He deals with all the promoters now.
And he does all the promoting relationships across the Penske Entertainment, IndyCar Series platform. So yes, if he was involved, it was okay. Let's talk about the business side of this. How, what would you need? What accommodations would we need? And, you know, what would be the elements that would help put all this together, potentially for a race? So to have Montre, to have Miles, to have Kottmann, to have Ricardo Juncos, you know, that's a good lineup. And by the way, I didn't see photos of Canapino in them, but when I spoke to him yesterday morning, he was in Argentina at his house. So that would have been kind of late afternoon his time. I spoke to him about 11 o'clock Eastern. So it would have been at least middle to late afternoon in Argentina. He didn't say why it was there. I didn't know at the time to ask him. But anyway, it would be good. There's obviously a lot of energy and excitement for IndyCar racing in Argentina.
Yeah, it just comes down to money. I would imagine that the venue is likely fine. I think IndyCar is open to that, but it's expensive to go there. So you have to find someone that is willing to pay to bring the teams over and ideally allow them to make a little bit of a profit, because IndyCar team sponsors are not going to benefit as much from that. But still, they benefit. Similar time zone, so it can still work for television. Weather can help, so that can maybe fill this gap we're talking about right now. Maybe it's an exhibition race. I don't know, but we like racing, so I think this is all very positive on that front. All right, we'll preview what's coming up in hour number two. We'll check into some tweets coming up at KevinLee23, at Kurt Cavan. Much more on the way. Trackside 93.5, 107.5 The Fan.
Hi.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
This is Renus VK, and you're listening to Trekside.
Hey, before I forget, show next week, still on Tuesday. We're on a similar schedule for a while, so a full 2 hours next Tuesday night, and that continues through at least the end of April, so throughout March and April. So I brought up NASCAR in the last segment, and I forgot maybe the one of the more interesting moments of the NASCAR weekend in Atlanta. And news came down late this afternoon on Josh Williams. If you didn't see that in the Xfinity race, Josh Williams was one of many, many, many that were involved in crashes. And at one point, as his car is back on track, repaired, the bear bond didn't stick, and he started littering parts, and NASCAR black flagged him and told him to go to the garage, and Josh decided that wasn't fair, so he parked on the start-finish line and got out in grand fashion and waved everyone, almost like a walk-off, like, I'm done with NASCAR, I'm just going to leave it here. He wasn't quitting or anything to that extreme, but as expected, that was not received well. He spent the rest of the race waiting in the NASCAR hauler, and he's been suspended for the next race. So you kind of talk about, hey, you can run over people at times and not get suspended. But if you park your car on the track and cause a further delay, that doesn't go well. And in some ways, you know, there are a lot of gray areas and crashes. Yeah, when you don't listen to what the race officials tell you to do, that is pretty much a no-no. Now, I'll say this. It's probably going to work out in the long run well for Josh Williams, because I'm going to guess most of you had never heard of him before. I knew of him because he did a little bit of ARCA when I was covering ARCA, and I watched the Xfinity races. But he's in one of the underfunded programs that I don't even know the full details of it, but I think he's heavily involved in the operation of it. He's not the car owner or anything like that, but they don't have all the funding to have the best car, and now he's gotten some attention. There's already a GoFundMe out there. I think this will pay off for Josh Williams in the long run, who's starting to look more and more like, what, Kenny Powers from the HBO show, the baseball relief pitcher. He didn't have the mullet when I knew him a few years ago, but an interesting character, and I do think he has some talent, so there you got that. And then this weekend, we've got a cornucopia of personalities and talent in the NASCAR race at Circuit of the Americas. So I always am interested in the road course weekends. You got Connor Daly back in the car. Hopefully it's not bouncing. Jimmy Johnson, we'll call him still an IndyCar driver. He's back in the Cup car this weekend. A couple of former F1 guys, Kimi Raikkonen, not just F1 guys, world champions, and Jenson Button. Rodney Sandstorm, also known as Corvette sports car driver Jordan Taylor, makes his NASCAR debut. He's in the Chase Elliott car. I talked with Jordan about that some over the weekend. You know, and I think everybody thinks, hey, road racing driver in Chase Elliott's car, a Hendrick car, he's going to have a chance to win. Yeah, I hope he does, but that's not really realistic. He's never driven the car. He's done a little bit of simulator stuff. It's not the same as the sports car that he's been testing, the Garage 56 car. It's 8 or 9 seconds slower, whatever. It's not the same. And all the NASCAR Cup guys can road race. So he's in a good car. I would say top 20 is a really good day for him. But to expect him to come out and win like you can maybe an Xfinity in a Gibbs car, it's not the same in the Cup Series. But I like Jordan, and I hope it goes well for him this weekend and he gets more chances. Sage Karam's in the Xfinity race. Ed Jones is in the truck race, and our buddy Parker Kligerman is doing the truck race again in the 75 along with his regular deal in the Xfinity race. So there's your NASCAR update. We'll talk about at the end of the show tonight what's coming up at Sebring in the USF Pro Championships. So that is on the way. And Kiffin Simpson, Indy Next driver, Sebring class winner with Scott McLaughlin. He's on the way, and Ryan Hunter Ray back in the Indy 500 is coming up next. Trackside 93.5, 107.5, The Fan.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
And Hunter Ray darts in, moves to the outside as they get the white flag. One to go, Jerry.
They are side by side. Elio looks to the outside. Elio will have to take the number two spot. He's right on the rear wing of Ryan Hunter Ray.
Hunter Ray looking for number one. Elio Castroneves looking for win number four. Ryan Hunter Ray, 8 car lengths in front as they move in the backstretch for the final time.
Did Elio make the move? 3 laps too early. Does he have anything at all left in the tank? A couple of turns to go. Ryan Hunter Ray leads it in the
turn number 800 is upon us. Less than a car length is the difference. The final turn. Hunter Ray to call the finish. The voice of the 500, Paul Page.
And it is Ryan Hunter Ray that is going to lead Elio Castroneves across the line. Ryan Hunter Ray has his first Indianapolis 500-mile race win.
I'm Ryan Hunter Ray, and this is Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee.
Hour number two of Trackside, 93.5, 107.5, The Fan in Indianapolis. Thanks for staying with us, Kevin Lee, Kurt Cavan. And some of you heard, our next guest didn't hear it, but I suspect he's heard it before. The finish to the 2014 Indianapolis 500. Indianapolis 500 winner Ryan Hunter Ray is going to be back coming up this year for his 15th 500. And he joins us right now. Ryan, how are you? Congratulations.
Doing excellent, guys. Thanks for having me. No, I appreciate it. Really looking forward to getting back to the Speedway with Ryan Reinbold Racing. It's a great opportunity. And I'm ready to rock, ready to go.
It was a nice, pleasant surprise. Once I heard a couple of people that were in the mix for that, it wasn't going to happen. You know, I sort of started thinking, all right, who could it be? I think it might be Ryan. What's the process been like? Because I thought you might be in the Ganassi seat. Then I thought you were going to be in the extra Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan seat. And then this comes together. What has this been like over the last, well, probably the last 10, 11 months?
Yeah, it's been crazy. First of all, I've never seen, an Indy only efforts being put together so early, which is just a testament to the health of the sport, which is great news. But this process went all over the place. I mean, it started at Ganassi. He was talking to Ray Hall. I went down the road. All the while, I was talking to Dennis Reinbold. And, I've known him at the track for years. You know, obviously, Justin drove there and, prior to him going to Coyne and then to Andretti. But I was talking to him over the months, and he had such a patience and respect for the situation. And the more I got to know him, the more I really, really thought this was a possibility. And like I said, it has gone all over the place, and I think I ended up in the right situation. Racing IndyCar is about people. It's about the people. And the more I got to know the people involved, they are the right people. And, I have my former crew chief is there. There's familiar faces. And then when you see Dennis's full on, just his desire, his passion for the 500, and that's really what matters to him. It's what matters to me. Things really aligned, and here we are.
The reputation of the program that Dennis has built over the years is very strong. And even not being around it, you know, I'm sure you had heard some of those same things, that this is quality. Did you need to see a little bit more, though? You don't have to do this. And I know you won't do it if you don't think there's a chance that you can win the race. Did you need to investigate a little bit further to make sure and confirm what you had heard over the years?
Absolutely. I mean, I think, like I've said from day one, I want to do the 500 if I have a shot at winning it, because I have that much respect for the race. I have that much respect for my career, what I've done there, what I've done in IndyCar. I only want it to be the right situation. And taking the year off last year was really the right thing. It was good for me. I have been in the same organization for 12 years, right? So there's a lot of things that I didn't necessarily have to pay attention to. In the vetting process, I knew I was with a good team. I knew the engineer. I knew the crew chief. I knew all the people. And it was a much different scenario this time around. So yeah, I really had to go into it and get through all the finer details. I went to the to Dennis's shop, Ryan Reinbold's shop, checked everything out, met people, and this is a process and a decision that I took very seriously. And it took quite some time, not just on the Dry and Reinbold side, just in general. So, but I am very happy with the decision, and I'm looking forward to the challenge ahead.
Ryan Hunter Ray joins us. Ryan, you've had, so much connection to Honda, and this will be a Chevy program. Ray Goslin, your longtime engineer, is on the Chevy side. Has that been, has Ray been a source of information, I guess, in that vetting process?
Yeah, absolutely. Ray and I are great friends. Obviously, we've been working together for 12 years, had a lot of success together. And yeah, I talk to Ray all the time, you know, whether it be career advice, whether that be, what do you think about this program, this person, this personnel, this and that and the other, I bounce a lot off of him. But when it came to the Chevy side, yeah, I was asking. Chevy came with a big upgrade last year, and I'm looking forward to this year. But I have a great relationship with GM just from back in the day when I won the championship with them in 2012, and all the time that I've spent in sports cars with them as well, as recently as last year. So I had really good repertoire with Jim Campbell at GM. So things fit on that side of it too. Really did. It kind of expedited the process a bit. And I look forward to working with Ray in a much different capacity than we're used to. But now I'm still going to get to work with him, and discuss with him every day what's going on with the team, the engine, the car, the whole thing.
Yeah, I noticed you came to town and didn't offer, like us to have us to have lunch or anything like that. What did you learn, when you go into a shop? What are you looking for? I mean, is it just a simple matter of trying to understand people and, from Dry and Reinbold's standpoint, they don't participate, anytime except for Indy. What things are there that show you that this can be a good program?
Yeah, I was flying under the radar for sure. And that's how I wanted it. So I'll owe you that lunch, Kurt. But it's all about the people, right? So I wanted to get face to face. I wanted to meet folks. I wanted to interact with them, and I feel like I asked the right questions, and they had really good answers. And that's where the dialogue started. And then we started walking around the shop, and, we were there for several hours going through, looking at the cars. And, I have a, obviously for the amount of time that I've spent at the Speedway, especially, got a pretty good eye for, what looks like on the exterior, at least a well-prepared, Indy 500, car. So, all of these boxes were being checked off as I was going down it. And, like I said, it really comes back to the people.
Ryan Hunter Ray is joining us. Not only has he won the race, but he's finished third and fifth before. And the last time he competed, a couple of years ago, might have been a winner there. He was really strong, and he was one of several that had brake issues entering the pits that took away the opportunity. So the question is, with a year off, how long does it take you to feel comfortable again? What, if anything, do you think would have changed from then to this year to add to a challenge to you?
No, I mean, that's, for me, it's going to be like riding a bike. I've spent way too much time in IndyCar and at the Speedway. It absolutely, I'll get right back in it, right up to speed. I would say the extra challenge is the different aero options that we're going to have to, you know, kind of work our way through and get an idea for what might be an option on race day, depending on conditions. So I think, you know, really the fact that I'm working with some people that I've known in the past, I have confidence in them. You know, this is obviously a different team. That's the big difference, right? I've always walked into the same garage for the past 12 years, the same engineering office at the Speedway. So those things are going to be a little bit different, but I look forward to it. It's a smaller program. It gives me the chance, really. You know, I don't necessarily want to call myself the quarterback. I guess I am, you know, the quarterback of the team. You know, it gives me a chance to mold it a bit to how the direction that I would like it to go. And I just look forward to working within a smaller program that I'm used to and see how that really translates to on-track performance.
It's funny, we won't see you. I was just imagining you walking through the garage area in a yellow driver suit. I mean, that starters is going to be a different type of experience. And I kind of brought that up because I saw those photos that your wife posted today of your oldest child in 2014. That must feel like such a long time ago that you won the Indy 500. Your kid at least won. How many? I don't remember how many of the boys were at that
race.
That
was just one.
Just one. But you know, does it feel like, you know, such an eternity ago? I mean, it's been 9 years.
Yeah, it does, but it doesn't, because we've come back in between that time with cars that I feel were even stronger than our 2014 car, right? And that's the thing about Indy. You can have the strongest car in the field, but it doesn't owe you anything. Everything has to come together perfectly. Everything has to be executed 100%. And even at that point, you still have a fight to the end with, you know, 10 other lunatics going for the same, you know, goal, the same, you know, trophy. And that's the beautiful thing about it. I feel like in 2016 had the car to win, like you said, 2021 brakes went to the floor, but we're in the top three. So we could sit here and talk forever about the missed opportunities, but because I was in that mindset and that feeling during the race that I had a shot at winning just recently, it doesn't feel like it was that long ago that I won. But yeah, you know, it was long enough ago that my 10-year-old right now just turned 10. Doesn't, you know, really recall the whole victory celebration. So
sure.
that's too long ago for sure.
Yeah. I was going to ask you if 2016 maybe was the one, I don't know, maybe 21, which of those races is the one, you know, they talk about the ones that got away, which one is the most got away?
16 for sure is absolutely. And then, you know, we had the incident in pit lane where Townsend ricocheted off Elio, they ricocheted into it and then hit us. And then we went all into the wall and, what a disaster. But yeah, that was definitely the one. The 16, I knew I had that same feeling like in within 10 laps of the beginning of the race in 14, I said, okay, I have a contender here. Within 10 laps of the beginning of that race in 16, I said, okay, let's just take care of this car because I know I can win this race with it if I get the shot at the end. So that's the one. But that's what keeps you coming back, right? It's like, you know, your average golfer, you know, you're hacking it all day, and then all of a sudden you hit one, you know, 2 inches from the pin. It keeps you coming back for years to come. But no, I absolutely love Indy. It's everything that you know. It's everything that I've thought of away from the racetrack has been Indianapolis, no doubt.
I haven't seen you since Petit Le Mans last fall, so I always get at least a couple of times a year a kid karting update. What's the latest? What's going on there?
What's going on there? Just a little bit more on track activity. You know, we're doing these test days, the open test days with other kids on the track, trying to get them mixed in with it. We just did it last weekend. And obviously, you know, from my standpoint, it's great for me to get behind the seat of the 175cc shifter and really get not only the physical side of it, but, you know, the reflexes and everything, just keeping everything sharp. You know, I've been keeping after the physical fitness program as I always have. So, I absolutely love karting for that. And I'm, you know, the kids really do enjoy it. They love it. And, but to put three of them through it, honestly, at this point, I've come to the realization that that is just going to be too steep of a financial ask. So I'm trying to weed them out, weed it through, you know, who I can throw golf clubs at or a soccer ball and say, all right, go have fun. And then the one that's most passionate about it, I think it comes down to the one that really asks and begs on the off weekends when they're not there. The one that's like, when can I please go back to the go-kart track? That's the one that's going to get to go.
That's the right approach. They yep. need to want it way more. And, you know, we've seen this. There are a lot of parents who seem to want it more than the kids do. And you ask any kid, do you want to race? Of course they do. So the kid has to go out of their way to make it happen and convince you. So I like that approach, and I wish you the best.
Yeah. I appreciate it. You know what it takes, and I'm not pushing it on them at all. You know, it's quite the opposite. In fact, I just really enjoy the days down there with my family at the go-kart track, and everybody's having fun, and we're enjoying driving. We're enjoying driving these you know, these race carts. That's the best, right? That's the purest form of it. But yeah, and you know, my wife and I were talking about it, and you know it as well as anybody, Kevin, just how tough it is to make it in the sport, right? It's so oversaturated at the bottom. It's so expensive. And then you're gunning for what? 27 IndyCar seats, 27 seats out of, all these kids that are coming up through road racing go-karts.
We often hear that you have to, you know, the first driver you have to beat is your teammate. Apparently you have to beat your brother.
Yes.
Exactly. That's an interesting.
They just don't know it yet.
Yeah, that's an interesting take on it. How have you stayed connected? What are you doing with your time through the day? The boys are at school, and you know, you've got your the planning for Indy. But what else have you been doing to kind of get yourself in position for this upcoming race?
Well, this one has been this has been a full time job working every angle of this. Like I said, this all started. I remember just a few years ago, you know, these programs would be coming together, negotiations starting in February, March, and announcements coming in April and stuff like that. I mean, this was all started in October at Petite. You know, we were having in-depth conversations about, you know, the direction of what it looked like for the Indy 500 with what program and things like that. So, it's been constant, constant work and trying to make that happen. And, you know, it looked like for a bit, I was going to be back in the Cadillac and the endurance races with the two Ganassi cars splitting, one going to WEC, one staying here at IMSA. I was going to potentially be in the seat that Scott Dixon's in now, but, you know, Scott wanted to come back. And of course, Scott is, you know, he's the Ganassi man, you know, he's the CGR man. So I completely understand that. And you know, there's just been a lot of, it's just keeping on top of all these different scenarios that were going on, you know, on top of everything else with the kids and all that. And then, you know, the other stuff that we have going on, personally, our investments and whatnot has been a full-time job.
Are you open to sports car racing beyond the top class? And if so, what limitations are there to do that with your driver ranking?
There is. That's a very good point. A lot of limitations, right? When it comes to a platinum ranked driver, it's tough. It is really tough. Anything outside of the top class. With that said, I've driven, you know, I drove the NSX in its debut with Shank, and I drove the Viper, the SRT Viper. So I've done the GT stuff. I'd really prefer to do the prototype thing. The prototype deal was a weird one this year because you had all these, you know, on the surface, you saw numerous cars coming in. But in fact, you know, these manufacturers brought in their own drivers, right? That had been factory drivers for years. So you're not picking from the prototype IMSA pool of drivers at the time. You're actually pulling from, you know, a lot of these guys are GT, longtime GT OEM drivers. So there wasn't many opportunities. And I really just kind of left the Ganassi thing go for a long time until it was, you know, everything was kind of dried up. But yeah, I'm open to it. I think on the GT side, I'm still kind of holding out for the prototype deal, but we'll see where that goes.
That's what I was going to say, is that a lot of the prototype seats went to people that were not prototype drivers. So now they're, you know, the pool of available candidates has gone up by about 30% because of the BMWs and the Porsches of the world that, you know, good for them. They promoted from within. But there are people that we weren't thinking about for those seats a couple of years ago. Hey, some other really good news in the last few weeks, and I think you'll enjoy this process even more because people won't be just asking you, hey, what are you doing now? you can say what you're doing, but you're going in the Long Beach Walk of Fame with our buddy James Hinchcliffe coming up in a few weeks.
Yeah, that'll be fun. Absolutely. Looking forward to it. Long Beach, obviously, I think my favorite race outside of Indy. And to be in the Walk of Fame there is awesome. To be inducted with James at the same time, you know, we're great, great friends. He comes to all of our Race to Beat Cancer events, you know, so I spend quite a bit of time with James, actually, just because he's down in Florida and he comes to our events and things like that. So we're going to have fun out there. It'll be good to be back at Long Beach. And, you know, I think I'd once I get there, I'd rather be behind the wheel of a car at Long Beach because that place is unlike any other street course. But yeah, it'll be fun and it'll be a nice, you know, segue into the month of May.
James is a good person to hang out with because now you can do home and homes. It's not just him visiting you. You can visit his new place, which is pretty cool as well.
I don't know if he's a good person. He's just, he's fun to hang out with, you know?
That's what I said. A good person to hang out with, I think, at least. Yeah.
Exactly. Yes. Well, too. He is.
Hey, Ryan, no doubt. We're all so happy that you're going to be back in a good seat again at the Indy 500 this year. We'll see you in Long Beach in a few weeks, and we'll see you in Indy here in May. Actually, we'll
Thank
see you in April,
so
I'm sure, right? We'll see you in April.
Absolutely. Yeah, we'll see you in April out there. Absolutely. And I appreciate it, guys. Look forward to seeing you soon and spending more time at the Speedway.
Test time coming up a couple of days for the full field. I think it's April 20th and 21st, I believe, at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. It is. Ryan Hunter-Reay will be in the number 23, Dreyer and Reinbold Chevy. Stay with us. We've got plenty more to come. Another driver that works in IndyCar in the Indy Next Series, and one at Sebring, Scott McLaughlin's teammate in the LMP2 class, Kiffin Simpson, joins us coming up. Trackside 93.5, 107.5, The Fan.
Hi, this is
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
I'm Simon Pagenaud, and you're listening to Trackside.
Thank you for staying with us. Trackside continues, 93.5, 107.5, The Fan in Indianapolis. We can talk about a lot of things with our next guest. He is one of the Indy Next drivers, one of the many, many drivers for HMD, and one of the many that has a different affiliation. So he is in the Chip Ganassi Racing Camp. So it's the number 21 HMD with CGR Indy Next car. And he also just happened to be on the overall podium at the Mobile 1 12 Hours of Sebring and win in class in LMP2 in the number 8 Tower Motorsport car. Scott McLaughlin and John Ferrano were his teammates. Kiffin Simpson joins us now. This has been a pretty productive last little stretch for you. How was winning at Sebring?
It was very incredible. It was a crazy race. Like you said, we were on the overall podium somehow, just with all the chaos that went on throughout the race. And we won our class as well. So it was a really big weekend for us, and we were really happy about it. So, yeah, the whole team did a great job.
You know, going into the Rolex 24, it was discussed a little bit. Hey, you never know. We're not sure if these new GTP cars are going to last for 24 hours. And it was kicked around if maybe we might see an LMP2 win overall. Turns out that the GTPs did last pretty well. So we weren't thinking about this one. What are you thinking as you're watching? You're at this point on the pit stand. Was your car leading class anywhere near when the top three overall cars all crashed together in the GTP class?
Yes, I think we had just gotten to the lead. I think the GTP crash happened just after the restart, right as we had gotten to the lead. So I think it was just long enough after that there was a gap to where we weren't really close to getting into the incident, luckily. But it was soon enough after as well that it ran it, the next yellow ran it right to the end almost of the race. So it was just a real quick 3-lap sprint to the finish.
And then it was a tight finish. I think Scott won by like 8/10 of a second or whatever in class. You know, it's a shame that we weren't able to focus on that because there's the top class always gets all the love at the end. But I get the impression your class was pretty intense.
Yeah, it was a tough race at the end. I think the car behind us pitted a couple laps later under the second to last safety car, and I think they had new tires, so they were pretty quick. And Scott, I don't think, did. So he was just trying to hold them off the best he could, and he did a great job defending the last three laps and was able to bring it home in P1.
So this doesn't seem right, and the other longtime sports car drivers probably won't think it's fair either. You're just barely 18 years old now. Is that correct? 18?
Yeah.
And you've won Petit Le Mans and the Sebring 12 in Clash. You won in GTD to finish off last year for Gradient Racing. You're supposed to have to pay for this and suffer for a little while.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm very surprised how quick I've gotten to win these last two, both Sebring and Petit. It's a real blessing from God.
And you win this one with a crash. You have just the slightest off, and that doesn't go well. Was it exit turn one? And when I saw it, I just saw, that's a shame. That's a shame. That car's done.
Mm-hmm.
Did you think it was done or significantly damaged at that point to still have a chance to at least compete for the win?
Yeah, for a while I was very worried about it because in the car I thought it was pretty bad. Just the way the car got into the wall, I thought it would have pulled a wishbone or something like that, just bent a wishbone or something like that. But it was all fine and it was all just bodywork stuff. So I drove around and safety car came out in like the next, I don't know, 10 seconds for another car that had a problem, I think. So we didn't fix it right away, but we were able to fix it under safety car, which was probably better. And we stayed on the lead lap.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And as you're tiptoeing back, you're trying to feel it out to see how broke it is.
Yeah. Honestly, I wasn't really tiptoeing it back that much because I kind of had to, there was the wave around as well. So you had to be pushing or else you would be passed by everyone. Yeah. So I was trying to go as quick as possible also to get the wave around lap back. But, you know, keep it safe and not crash it again. So, just had to bring it back to the pit box and then go back out and try to finish off that stint.
And that probably helps. So you get to get right back up on the horse and finish the stint. All went well. You did a lot of driving at night too. I always like to ask people, because I don't think any of the rest of us can fathom that at all. What is it like driving at night at Sebring?
Yeah, it's tough. It's not the toughest track. I'd say Petit's definitely darker than Sebring. But it is one of the tougher tracks at night. But it's a lot of fun. And it's a track that, on the short course at least, I've driven a lot of testing in Indy Next and a little bit in IndyCar as well. And it's a track that when you do enough laps that you kind of get the flow of it well. And then even when it goes dark, you know more or less where the track's going to go.
More or less. That's not enough.
Yeah.
I need sometimes. More than more or less.
Yeah. You just have to trust your gut sometimes.
Okay. Kiffin Simpson is joining us, and he's had the opportunity to be teamed up over the last couple of sports car races with Joseph Newgarden and Scott McLaughlin at the Rolex, and they had an electrical problem right off the start, or they might have had a chance to win that one. And McLaughlin brings it home in this one. We'll get to the racing part of it in a moment, but Scott's a fun guy. Is he able to show that at all in the intensity of a race weekend? Are you seeing some of the things that we enjoy about his personality behind the scenes?
Yeah, a little bit. He is a little bit more professional when you get to behind the scenes, but you know, you'd expect that, especially being an IndyCar driver. You've got to have definitely some level of professional profession to you. So I think he's got a great balance of humor and when it gets down to business, getting down to business. But it's been great working with him so far, and I can't wait till the next race.
So I've asked you a lot about this at Daytona and Sebring, so we'll share with the audience now. What has the experience of working with two IndyCar race winners, one of them, well, both champions, Scott in supercars and Joseph in IndyCars, what has that done that you can put in your pocket and use as you move forward?
It's been very helpful. It's been cool working with them about how they like to set up the car and learning how they give feedback. They get very technical with it, and I've gotten to learn a lot about dampers and how they feel dampers and damper changes and little things like that. And how they give feedback about it as well can be a little bit different. So it's been cool learning about all that stuff and things that I haven't gotten into so much in other series that I've been in.
And then you also have, I'm sure, already a little bit of an opportunity to glean some things on IndyCar weekends with the Ganassi team. So, mm-hmm. so maybe that's why you're not in as awe as some other young drivers would be. How much of that being embedded with the team had you already had and already kind of seen how, you know, the Scott Dixons and the Alex Palou's and Marcus Ericssons of the world work?
Yeah, it's definitely helped being with Ganassi as well. I've also learned a lot from all of those guys. And it's just a little bit different when you get in the car and you feel the exact same change as what they do. When it goes from, the car moving one way to the car moving slightly different, and you feel that yourself as well as hearing how they react to it, it also changes and helps you apply that to previous things that you've heard from what I've heard from the Ganassi guys and things that I'm sure I'll experience in the future.
So when you're in an engineering meeting and the engineers are saying, what would you like done to the car? I know my reaction would be, I want to know what they would like done to the car. How do you kind of balance that with, let's listen to the champions compared to, I still would like to have the car the way I'd like to have the car.
Yeah. So far we haven't had much of a problem because Scott and I seem to like a pretty similar car. Our feedback's usually very similar on what we want from the car. The one difference is sometimes how we want to get that. And when it comes to that, I just try to listen to them because obviously I don't have the experience they do on that kind of side of things. So just listening to them and learning how they get performance out of the car in IndyCar and with Scott from V8 Supercars, it's been great to figure that out as well.
Yeah, I guess that'd be my other thought. Whatever they'd like, I'd probably like that as well. So let's give it a try their way. And they're generally pretty fast, so let's try it. What does this do for you when you go back to Indy next now? You know, there's so little time testing the cars on a race weekend. Now you did probably 6 hours-ish at Daytona, somewhere in that range, if not more. How much did you drive this weekend? So you've done an extra, basically a season of racing that you would get in Indy next in the first two IMSA races.
Something like that. It's been a lot of driving. In practice, it's very similar in practice with having to split the car between multiple drivers. So the practice part wasn't.
Yeah, there's not much there.
Yeah, it's not a whole lot, but yeah, it's been great getting a lot of seat time in during the races. And I think that just seat time always helps, and racing also always helps. So I've gotten a lot of racing in this year already, and I think that it'll help me throughout this year.
I need to go back and watch the St. Pete Indy Next race again to remember all of the different things that happened. But I know you finished. You finished on the lead lap. You didn't have a fully clean race, right?
No one did.
I assume you got into something at some point.
Yeah, a couple people were able to have clean races, but most people didn't. And it was a really rough race for us. Just had a couple of incidents. And right towards the end, there was just a car that had a half spin and blocked the track. So there wasn't really anywhere to go, and got stuck and had to reverse and go again. And all that. But it, you know, it happens at St. Pete, those kinds of races, that stuff happens. And I think when we get to Barber, it'll be a much cleaner race because of having a little bit more grip across the racetrack. Whereas at St. Pete, you've got a lot of dust off line. So I think that'll change a lot when we get to Barber, and I'm excited to see how it goes.
And fewer concrete walls, that's always welcome. So that's a big break between events. So May 1st weekend is the next one. But luckily, you're in the car a lot. And kind of update people on the other race thing that you've been doing. And you still have more before Barber, don't you?
Yeah, I've got, I'll be at Texas, not to race, but just to be there with Chip Ganassi Racing. And then I'll be in Barcelona for the first round of European Le Mans Series.
And you've already won in that series this year?
I won in Asian Le Mans Series.
In Asian Le Mans Series. Same car, different short season. Okay. So how many races are you doing this year?
I think when we added it up, it was 26 races. I don't remember how many weekends.
And 26 races plus at least three of them are long endurance races. Are you a part of the Watkins Glen lineup as well?
Yeah.
That's a 6-hour race. So you got four pretty long races. Yeah. By the way, Scott McLaughlin said he might be doing that race. It's still kind of TBD. Because the schedule is really busy that time of year, but he said he's definitely going to do Petit Le Mans with you guys late in the year as well. So, you know, I would say, what's the expectation? I know everybody's answer is I'm going to win the championship, and I can find six other drivers that realistically would say the same thing, and probably 10 that would go ahead and say it in the biggest field we've had in many, many years in Indy Next, formerly Indy Lights. But what is... Where are you at in that series? Still 18 years old. There is time, but what do you need to get done this year?
I don't know that I need to get anything done this year. What I want to get done is obviously win the championship, like you said, but I also want to just win as many races as I can and get as many podiums as I can. But more importantly than that, learn what I can from this series and make sure that if I were to go to IndyCar next year, that I would be as prepared as possible.
Is it too early to ask what the plan is, whether you think IndyCar is an option, or is that something we should even internally not really think about until what, maybe June or something in that range?
Yeah, it's still so far out, and I've got so much going on this year as well that it makes it that much more difficult to think about next year. I know I've already done a lot of races this year, but it is still only March. So I think that could be a long time until I know what I'm doing next year. But
I think that's the right path.
Yeah.
You've had one race this season. You had last season as well, but let's give it a little bit of time. Then you can make the best decision for what is next on the horizon. Well, congratulations. Oh, I was going to ask you this too. Is there an overall podium? Is it just class podiums, or did you get to get on a podium with the top two in GTP?
We did not get on a podium with the top two in GTP.
That's all right.
I don't know if it's because there isn't an overall podium or what the reason is, but yeah.
There probably isn't, because it always works out that it's the prototype class, and they've got enough things going on, and it's already, what, 11 o'clock, 11:30 at night. They don't need to wrangle any more people for any more pictures. But that would have been my thought, making the overall podium in the second class. I would have, hey, can we get up there with the Porsche and the Cadillac people and do a little, well, you do your own. Well done. That's something that will be remembered, getting to the podium overall in the LMP2 class, and you have the trophy for the class winners in what is a really talented class in sports car racing. Kiffin, congratulations, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you.
Kiffin Simpson, HMD with CGR in Indy Next, the number 21 car, and just won in class at the Mobile 1 12 Hours of Sebring this past weekend with Tower Motorsports. Stay with us. We'll see what we missed and more next. Trackside 93.5, 107.5 The Fan.
Hi, this is Colton Herta.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
And you're listening to Trackside.
Okay, final segment. Quick check of the Twitter inbox. Chris, and he's on it, says, there you go. Our conversation, an hour ago, talking about Josh Williams, the guy who parked, literally, you know, we like to say parked it. He did park it, but not in victory lane on the start-finish line when his car was falling apart instead of pulling it back off the track into the garage. He's more than doubled his Twitter following. Adam Stern of Sports Business Journal tweeted this this evening. More than doubled his Twitter following since parking his car Saturday in the Xfinity race. Went from 12,300 to 24,800. So, yes, it's not like he crashed anyone or injured anyone. This is not ideal, and NASCAR is going to frown on it, but no one was harmed in the social media increase of Josh Williams, and I suspect he'll find some sponsorship out of this. The real Kurt St. Angelo tweets, so he was replying to something. Oh, and his question was, so he tagged me and others after this, is Joseph Newgarden a U.S. and Danish citizen? If so, there may be six Scandinavians this year in IndyCar, if you include drivers who are the result of the Norman conquest. Well, that's getting deep into Anglo-Saxon history and so forth. Ilott, Harvey, Legg, Wilson, Daly, Power, Dixon, etc., the Nords indisputably dominate the series. Well, you do have Christian Lundgaard, and then you have Benjamin Peterson, and in Indy next, you have Christian Rasmussen from the region. So, back to the original question. Joseph's mom, Tina, is, I think she's Danish. She's Scandinavian, of Scandinavian descent. So I don't know if Joseph has citizenship or not. I think sometimes that's just a matter of it might be applying for it. You're eligible. I'm speaking out of turn because I don't know. But I think I've heard of people where their spouse is from another country and they went through the process of getting their kids dual citizenship. But I'm not sure. Depends on the country. If it's automatic, it might be something you have to apply for. There you go. Maybe we asked Joseph that at some point. For the love of Indy, sorry, we didn't get to that for Ryan Hunter-Reay. I think that's a good question, though. What did he learn watching last year's 500 that he thinks would be helpful this year? I think that's always a good question for anyone, and I ask that a lot usually leading up to the race, especially when it comes down to planning to how to deal with the end of the race and the draft and now the snaking, which I have not heard that anything is going to change on that front. We wondered if maybe they might eliminate that to some extent, or put something where you can't at any point maybe extend a line from the pit wall all the way down to turn four. But I'm not aware of any change coming in that front, but that's still kind of a question for moving forward. But good question, and it's one we can ask him. But I don't know that he would know anything different. Everybody goes back and watches it again. Maybe if it doesn't go well, maybe they don't watch it that closely. And maybe he did. That is a good question. First time you're not in the 500, did you even watch? Did it hurt to watch? So thank you. All right, so let's see. What else is coming up? Back to Sebring this weekend, because where else would you be? It's trip number 8 or so over the winter. So I thought of this. I saw a note that this past weekend, it was Super Sebring again with the series that races at Le Mans or fields the cars for Le Mans, WEC, World Endurance Championship, racing a 1,000-mile or 8-hour race on Friday and then the IMSA race on Saturday. I have heard that that may not continue, and I saw a note from Sportscar 365 that speculation still goes on. If they run in America, I've not dug into this, but keep an eye out on Indianapolis. Maybe something can happen there. I don't know if that would be in tandem. If they're not going to do a Super Sebring with a doubleheader, they're probably not interested in working with IMSA again in September at IMS, but who knows where they end up. But here's a thought, and I got this from talking with, who was I talking to? Dane Cameron and Ricky Taylor. We were talking about when they first raced at Sebring, and they are among a lot of drivers. The first time they drove a car, both were Formula cars, were at Skip Barber in Sebring. And they both said, you know, what was cool back in the day is that we used to race in Skip Barber and other junior formula categories at Sebring with the 12 hour. So if the WEC race were to go away, that would open up a little bit more time. The former Road to Indy USF Pro Championships is there the next week. Someone needs to effort that. Obviously, it's good for like my driver and our partners to race in front of that massive crowd on a 12-hour weekend, but I would contend it's good for IMSA. Look at the IMSA drivers. Most of them came up through the Road to Indy, through Formula Cars, expose their parents, those that are paying for it, or their partners, or the drivers, to start looking into sports car racing. Get them there. It's good for everybody. That might be something that could be explored in the future. If not them, get the Lucas Oil Formula Car Series there or something else. Jackson is racing there this weekend. It's the season debut for USF Juniors. These are all the same chassis, just more power, more tire, more wing as they go up. USF Juniors, then USF 2000, then USF Pro 2000, which was Indy Pro 2000. Jackson is going to race Friday afternoon at 4, Saturday afternoon at about 3:30. You can follow along on their app as well. And then we will watch all the Formula One and IndyCar drivers at COTA on Sunday afternoon. We'll see you next Tuesday night here at 7 o'clock. Thanks for listening to 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.